You're listening to Camden Newscast.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.
You're listening to Camden Newscast.
I'm Jason Mantere, and you're listening to the CC Radio Newscast. In this update, the Camden New Journal is giving cash to local community groups.
So at the moment, we're funded till the end of June, and after that, we're going to have to close unless we can find money from other sources.
The Camden Community Law Centre in Kentish Town faces funding cutbacks following the recent advice services review.
A lot of people have been coming here for many, many years. You know, it's part of the community, and if it was that we weren't able to offer these services, a lot of people would struggle to go elsewhere to access those.
The Pope and Vatican officials are being taken to the International Criminal Court for widespread systematic sexual violence.
Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, as the Pope then was the most senior Vatican official charged with overseeing investigations into all violations within the Church, so he must have known about the thousands of complaints of the sometimes hideous sexual abuse.
The Drill Hall, London's first lesbian and gay theatre, has closed after 30 years serving the community.
I didn't hear anything that indicated it was going to close down.
And Marion Larrigy met a man who has been drifting about and recorded his explanation of the sport.
That's part of the idea, is there's no right or wrong idea, there's lots of different versions.
The Camden New Journal, or C&J, Christmas Hamper Appeal Fund has a little cash left over, so they are looking for deserving organisations that they can give it to. I spoke to the C&J and one of the groups hoping to benefit. First stop is the Ingestra Road Community Centre, home to one of the groups who have applied for some funding.
I'm Spencer Woodcock, the coordinator of the Ingestra Road Good Neighbour Scheme.
Can you tell us a bit about what the Good Neighbour Scheme does?
We support people in Kentish Town and Gospel Oak, parts of NW5. We support older people to live independently with dignity. And we do this in various different ways. The main ones being that we have befriending volunteers that can visit individual people on a one-to-one basis. We have a programme of outings and day trips, which goes right through the year. We also have two part-time practical workers who can do jobs for people that home care services won't do, like gardening or window cleaning, putting a shelf up, that sort of thing. And they also escort people, older people need taking out. They'll go with them and do that.
Spencer, can we actually meet someone who uses the service?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, let's head down to Torreon Avenue and meet Frida.
What do prisoners use to call each other?
I don't know.
A prison cell. I'm cheating, aren't I? And the other one is a patient. Doctor, doctor, I keep thinking I'm a spoon. Doctor says, sit over there and please and don't stir. Like that one. And you want my age now, and I'm 85 in July.
Well, happy birthday in advance for July. Yeah, I mean, you use the service, don't you? Tell me, how does it help you? In what ways do you take advantage
of
it?
Well, it gets us out. We have days out, which is very interesting, and go lots of nice places. And we have days at the club where we have a get-together, which is very nice, meet one another once more. It helps you meet people, you know.
If someone was listening, I mean, tell them why you think it's important group gets the funding.
Well, the more funding there is, the more we can get out of it, you know what I mean? The more we can do as well. Because it's costly. We have little raffles now, don't we, to help it along. We should have had one yesterday. Yeah. I'll make sure we have one every time. But that's the only way we can help. So I think it's essential. And I think it's horrible what they're trying to do, cut everybody out. I mean, closing all these little homes, and there must be a way out other than doing that. I mean, they say they don't hit the elderly, but they are hitting the elderly in lots of ways.
Education and housing are facing cuts, and so too is the third sector. That's charities, voluntary organisations and social enterprises that encompass your local luncheon club, community centre or an organisation like Good Neighbours.
Is finances an issue? And can I ask, where does your funding come from?
Right, finances is a major issue. We've always been funded, and since 1996 we've been funded by Camden Council, but unfortunately because of the cuts that money's coming to an end. So at the moment we're funded till the end of June, and after that we're going to have to close unless we can find money from other sources.
And is this why something like the Hamper Fund is really important to you?
In the short term, every little helps.
Why would it be best for you to receive the funding?
We've been working in this area for a long time. We've worked with some of the most vulnerable elderly people in the borough. We've got 96 people at the moment we support in the area. And of those people, 16 of them are over 90, and the majority of them are over 80. And anybody who's younger on the scheme is on the scheme because they need support in other ways, for instance, serious disabilities. So we've got the people that need, cheering up, need support and something extra in their lives, and we're able to give it to them.
Dan Carrier is a reporter at the C&J and one of the custodians of the fund.
And what we've always done is gone and helped pay for older people's luncheon clubs, Christmas dinners, that sort of thing. So we did that a couple of times this year, but there was still some left over. So what we're looking for is community groups, before school breakfast clubs, luncheon clubs who are feeling the pinch particularly at the moment due to government cuts on social care, to see if we can maybe offer them a few quid to help keep their facility open in the coming 12 months. And so we're looking for people who are after small grants, basically.
And what's the response been like so far?
Well, it's been very good. We must have had, in a week, maybe 12 different clubs and groups come towards us and say, look, we could do with a little bit of an extra helping hand this year.
Applications for funding are still open. So if you want to get involved, I suggest you speak to Jean at the C&J.
You're sort of the centre point for people calling in about the hamper appeal.
I am.
If someone wants to get involved, maybe they want to contribute, or perhaps they want to put their own organisation forwards for some funding, how can they do so?
They can do so by emailing Dan Carrier, writing to the editor, or telephoning my line.
And what's your number?
It's 020-7424-3256.
The Camden Community Law Centre faces significant funding cuts. Staff and trustees were horrified to find that these will be implemented from April this year. Daryl McKay has this report.
The Camden Community Law Centre on Prince of Wales Road has been providing free legal advice for over 38 years. However, the centre will have to reduce some of the services provided due to Camden Council cutting back funding by nearly 60%. The council have been tasked with making cuts of some £100 million in all departments over the next 3 years, with further anticipated savings estimated at £50 million from 2014 onwards. I visited the Law Centre in Kentish Town to get a reaction to the news.
My name's Joseph Parker. I'm the debt worker at Camden Law Centre. We cover the areas of debts, welfare rights, employment, immigration and asylum, and also housing.
Recently, there's been news that you're going to lose funding up to about 60%. Tell me about that.
We have been told that we may lose funding for the areas of debt, housing and welfare rights, which may mean that we lose some funding in the near future.
And what's the feeling around here when the news broke?
Well, we were all very worried, obviously, for the clients, because at the moment, the way that the economy is and the changes within the government at the moment going through with regards to the welfare reform bill means that there's going to be changes to people's benefits.
All right, so looking to the future, what plans do you have?
Well, we're currently in the process of developing new projects. We're starting to look at external funders, to try and diversify the funding because, as I'm sure you're aware, pretty much every local authority in the whole country is going through changes and having reductions in funding. So that means that the need to get different funders is very important.
Okay, so Camden have a proactive approach to partnership working. What's your take on that?
I think in going forward it is important to try and work as closely together with different advice agencies and community organisations within the borough, simply to make sure that the people within Camden are given the best service possible, because it may be that there's certain services on offer within the borough that some people aren't aware of. But if we're able to work together and promote and push the service that's on offer, as I say, share resources, share ideas, share knowledge, it can only mean that the residents of Camden are given the best service possible.
What service would you say is oversubscribed here?
It's very oversubscribed at the moment. There's always a waiting list. There is a massive, massive need for the service. Pretty much all of my colleagues feel that it is very important to ensure that the service continues to provide an excellent free legal advice service to Camden. And that's our hope, that we can continue to do that in the future.
Although funding for welfare rights and housing advice has been cut, Camden Council have tried to ease the blow by introducing a new Equalities and Cohesion Fund that provides mentoring for homeless people and financial advice for families in debt. The fund provides £1 million per year for targeted groups over a period of 3 years for financially challenged residents or those in need of employment advice or training. In total, there were 95 applications for this fund and only 35 were successful, including the CCLC. I spoke to a long-term Camden resident who has also used the Law Centre's services to find out what they thought.
My name is Yvonne. I live in Camden. I've done so for the past 30 years. Learning about the cuts is quite devastating news. I've had calls to use the centre for employment issues, housing issues, and there are other general things. Furthermore, I've always referred people to the centre. In the Law Centre, you know there is a process, you get information, get the advice you're looking for, and I just believe it would be a terrible loss.
Despite the void created by a loss in funding, CCLC will need to adapt and be proactive in their approach to short-term collaborative work and long-term formal partnerships. A new way of working together with other organisations can be beneficial as it reduces operational costs and duplication, or so it seems. I visited the Law Centre's Federation near Fleet Street in the City of London to find out what these changes meant to them.
My name's Julie Bishop. I'm the director of the Law Centre's Federation, and the Law Centre's Federation is the umbrella body that serves and supports the 55 law centres around the country. So my reaction to the situation in Camden is that it's a real example of what's happening across the charitable sector, where cuts, central government cuts, are affecting local authorities. Local authorities in turn are having to revise their budgets and think hard about how best to spend their money. So while they do have a contract in some areas of law, they no longer are able to provide legal services to the people of Camden in the area of housing, welfare benefits and debt. Now, while there will be another provider who can do that, the problem is they're in a completely different part of Camden. But the second and the more important problem is that when people arrive at a law centre, they come as a person with a whole number of issues that are connected. They don't just come and say, oh, I want you to help me with this housing thing. They tell you a story, and often there are many elements to that story, and often there'll be a debt matter. But it could be an immigration problem, you know, because they've... So the Law Centre will say, oh, I'll help you with the immigration matter, but you need to go over to this other place across town and see if they can help you out on the benefits and the housing matter. It's costly, it's not effective, you don't know whether the client will go and fix up their other problems. You're losing opportunities, you're adding waste to the system, and at the end of the day, you're not helping a person as well as you could. And that's what we think is the unfortunate circumstance that's happened. While it's been a process that was advertised and undertaken, the end result of that process is that you're dividing people's lives into segments and you're sending them all over Camden rather than what was once there was a one-stop shop where someone could arrive. They knew that they would have someone who would listen to them and could solve all the issues related to their problem.
CCLC invites any listeners who would like to support them to a public meeting. The details are yet to be published, but once arrangements are finalised, information will be circulated shortly. If you wish to find out more, call the Camden Community Law Centre on 0207 284 6510 or check out the links provided in this edition of the newscast.
Pope Benedict, the man who now heads the Catholic Church, is alleged to have been directly responsible for the systematic cover-up of sexual abuse by Catholic priests across the world. Denise O'Connor reports on the case filed against him ahead of the Vatican's International Symposium happening this week.
Over the last 15 years in particular, thousands of complaints of inappropriate sexual conduct have been made against priests throughout the Catholic world, but very little has been done to address the situation. In recent weeks, a group of very tenacious people called the Survivors Network for Those Abused by Priests, the SNAP, have filed a lawsuit against the current Pope Benedict XVI and two of his cardinals at the International Criminal Court in The Hague for crimes against humanity. Together with the American Center for Constitutional Rights, the ACR, they have spent years documenting 22,000 pages of evidence, including witness statements, photographs, grand jury reports, and tribunal findings. These were filed in The Hague in early February, ahead of this week's international symposium in Rome called Towards Healing and Renewal, a Global Summit. For the International Court to accept that this lawsuit is within its jurisdiction, the SNAP and the ACR have to prove that the sexual abuse was widespread and systematic. They believe that they've proved that not only were the abuses widespread and systematic, but so were the cover-ups. The essence of the case against the Pope is that during the period 1981 to 2005, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, as the Pope then was the most senior Vatican official charged with overseeing investigations into all violations within the Church, so he must have known about the thousands of complaints of the sometimes hideous sexual abuse of members of the Catholic congregation by his clergy. This week's Global Summit has been convened in the face of growing outrage at the refusal of the Vatican to not only acknowledge what's been going on, but to do anything about stopping it. One, but by no means the only explanation given for this widespread and systematic sexual abuse of young people of both genders in Catholic parishes throughout the world, is the vow of celibacy. It's received wisdom that the purpose of celibacy, to refrain from marriage or any sexual encounter with another person, was less to protect the spiritual lives of nuns and priests from the corruptions of the flesh, but rather to prevent the Catholic Church's vast estates from passing to their wives and children. These estates in themselves had been acquired through the practice of recruiting the oldest sons in their communities, along with their inheritance rights, whether or not they had a true vocation. Irish Taoiseach Enda Kenny recently claimed in an unprecedented attack on the Vatican that there has been systematic misleading of state authorities by the Vatican and the Catholic Church over the past 40 years, and that this situation has given all Catholic priests a feeling of immunity not only from prosecution, but even reprimand. What has particularly enraged the SNAP and the ACR is the war the Vatican has waged on victims in this catastrophe. Individuals and families have been vilified by local bishops, threatened with social ostracization and even excommunication, and of course the notorious practice of priest shifting. When it became clear that a local priest is damaging to his community, he is simply moved on to another parish, rather than offered spiritual or psychological rehabilitation treatment. Corruption in the Vatican is as old as the institution itself, and the practice of persecuting whistleblowers is hardly confined to Rome. But whether the International Criminal Court has the political courage to accept this case and take on the Pope remains to be seen. We'll keep you up to date, of course. In the meantime, we will provide a more in-depth coverage of the Rome Symposium in our next newscast.
Camden Community Radio will bring news of what local survivors think of these proceedings and will keep you up to date as the court hearing develops. No one was expecting to find that one of Camden's best-loved gay theatre venues had gone. Least of all, Marion Larrigue, who was going to report on it in time for LGBT History Month.
One of Camden's much-loved fringe venues, the Drill Hall Theatre in Cheney Street, has closed its doors for good. For nearly 30 years, the Drill Hall provided a stage for writers and a home for audiences who would not otherwise have seen their lives and concerns reflected in theatre. It has come as an unwelcome surprise to many that the Drill Hall is no more.
I didn't hear anything that it indicated it was going to close down.
Did you know the Drill Hall?
Yes, of course. Did you know that it was closed?
Oh, that's dreadful.
It was a very cosy sort of theatre, quite intimate, always very friendly.
Yeah. When was the last time you went there?
Christmas 2010 for the lesbian panto, which was as rowdy an affair as usual. It was great.
And were they the kind of productions you would have seen elsewhere?
No. In those days, where else could you see lesbian comedians and productions with all lesbian casts? And that was quite a unique thing.
The Drill Hall opened after a decade of political and cultural upheaval in the heyday of fringe theatre and ran for over 30 years. It was a time when the mainstream was very conventional and not immensely interested in the lives and concerns of women, lesbians, gay men, Irish people, black people or disabled people. A little over a year ago, I talked with founder member and director of the Drill Hall, Julie Parker. After drama training, Julie toured with Gay Sweatshop and Nancy Duguid in the mid-1970s. I asked her how the Drill Hall Theatre started.
Nancy rang me up one day and said, look, we've been talking, we fancy running a women's festival and Action Space. They're going out on tour. Said we can take their building over for a few weeks. And that was it. We ran the first ever women's festival in 1977, which was an extraordinary thing. Now, it doesn't seem so unusual, but it was. People came from all over Europe, all over the world, to this festival that ran throughout the building with music, events, workshops about sexuality, about sex, for God's sake, which was unheard of. This was all very new. Very exciting. I then, after that, stayed on and worked a little bit with Action Space at the Drill Hall. Some years later, the company decided to leave the Drill Hall, the Action Space company, and we set up another company called Central London Arts, and that's where its identity comes from that you understand now. And it wasn't just lesbian and gay work, far from it. I mean, if you go back and look at what we were doing, although people go, oh, but there was the Pack of Women, all those fantastic shows. We were doing new opera. We were actually working with Temba, with Talawa, with all of those companies that nobody else would go near. The black companies, the women's companies, Grey Eye in its early days. People just thought we were beyond the pale. Why on earth did you want to have a company that just got black actors or that had actors with disabilities?
Many people who are considered socially marginal found their voice, often through experimental forms, at the Drill Hall.
Great work was made, and it was always for us the first question, are they going to make good theatre? Are they is that where they start from? But that it's informed by who they are and what their lives are, based in a vision of what theatre performance art should be. And then your politics and the passion for that gives you that spark and the vision that changes how the audience see things.
More recently, Drill Hall Theatre commissioned Ricky Beadle Blair to develop Fit, a play that tapped into a huge gap in materials for schools and young people and became an award-winning multimedia production.
Started out as a play in our education programme. We commissioned it with Stonewall and Queer Up North. And it was a play that was about homophobic bullying that Ricky wrote, but absolutely spoke to the kids. He has this ability to talk their language and engage with them. And it's toured now. It's toured all over the UK 4 times. From that, a movie's been made. We've also made the video diaries, which has gone into every secondary school in England about homophobia and bullying. And it's just won another award.
Perhaps because it was seen to be diversifying quite well, the Drill Hall had suffered cuts to its Arts Council grant and a reduction in rent support from Camden Council. This posed real challenges to the professional nature of the Drill Hall. Julie again.
Ever since we started out, we have always paid people. Always, always. And that is why 2 years ago I find it absolutely destroying when the Arts Council take money and we are having to use a volunteer force for things like ushering. So people who ought to be paid to do a job, you know, all this big society use volunteers. I think it's great on one level, but I also think it's taking people's jobs as well. I do get despondent when people come into the office, want to talk to me about a new project, and they will say to me, what is it you want us to make that will get the funding? And the answer is, I don't want you to make anything. I want to know what you want to do, and can we help you and support you in making that piece of work? And then you will see those sparks that will come through.
That basic commitment to enabling great drama to emerge from real lives encourages us to look beyond the venue that was the Drill Hall Theatre. While the building will now house RADA activities, the company that produced the theatre plans to trade as Outhouse Theatre and to continue to produce theatre. We can't wait until it surfaces with its first show in its new incarnation.
You can hear reminiscing about Women's Night at the Drill Hall, as well as the podcast of Marion Larrigy's full interview with Julie Parker on the LGBT section of Camden Community Radio's website. And in sport this week, Marion Larrigy has met a psychogeography enthusiast and asked him, what's this all about?
It's called psychogeography, which is half geography to do with places and towns and the way towns are structured or urban areas. And the other part of it is one's own psychological input into that. In other words, there is no one reality about any place. For instance, London is everybody has their own understanding and perception. And the idea is to explore a particular part of a neighbourhood and to try and decondition oneself, to try and see it with eyes anew. rather than making the same old associations, the same kind of routine thoughts, with Adrift one can get new insights into place. That's part of the idea, is there's no right or wrong idea, there's lots of different versions.
So drifting is a kind of a mental space, that you can have an emotional response to, as well as a kind of a practical thing of grounding yourself in a reality.
Well, this drift, the drift just refers to the plan for the walk. Like, one famous British writer who's associated with this is Will Self, and one drift of his that I very much like and respect was that he arrived in New York, and then instead of travelling by metro or by taxi to the city centre, he then walked 20 miles from the airport to Times Square. And if you imagine the kind of terrain that he walked through, like deserted industrial estates and sort of the kind of grimier areas of New York and endless freeways and so on, I think that gave him a very different insight into the dynamics of the city.
There you are. Even Will Self does. If you have any local news or a story you think should be heard, get in contact. newsdesk@ccradio.org. I'm Jason Mansaray, and you have been listening to the Camden Community Newscast. Stay tuned for our next update.